For Parshas Chukas, we're taking a look here in the Blue Chumashim in Perek Chaf Aleph of Sefer Bamidbar Pasuk Yudal. It's on the very bottom of page 391. And in Mirtz Shem, the Rashi on this Pasuk. The Torah itself is designating the various places where they encamped, where the Jewish people encamped. And this is after the mice of the what we call the Nachash HaNechoshes. And the Torah says that they left a place called Ovos. Then they got to Iye Avarim. From there they went on to a place called Nachal Zored. From there to Arnon, which is on the Gvul of Moab. So they're now situated somewhere between Moab and Eretz Yisrael. Have copies here if you want to take. And then there's a very dramatic pasuk over here. This is pasuk Yudalet, and it says the following: Al Kain Yeomar B'Sefer Melchamas Hashem Es Vahev B'Sufa Ves HaNechalim Arnon. So again, they're on a journey, they're on the border of Moab, the Torah says, and they're between Moab and the Gvulos of Ammon. How are you? Again, I have here if you want to take it. And therefore, it is written in the books called the Wars of Hashem, and this is called a gift. Okay, a gift. And it's not clear exactly what this gift is made of. It says here, Vahev Bisufa. Vahev Bisufa. So I'm looking here to see if the English translation adds anything here. I think he's as confused as we are. He says, therefore, it says in the book of the wars of Hashem, the gift of the Sea of Reeds and the rivers of Ammon. So it means that Ammon and Moab are situated one near each other. And Vahev is a reference to the river of Ammon. And Sufa is an allusion to Yamsuf. That's what he learns in the English translation. Now we'll take a look at Rashi. Rashi on the Pasuk says that this Al-Kain Ye'omer isolates this particular Chanoya amongst the various encampments, and it identifies it with a great miracle. Some great miracle took place at this location called Vahev Bisufa. Vahev Bisufa. And Rashi tells us about this great miracle. This miracle, he says, is almost comparable to Yamsuf. And Rashi says that there were two great mountains, or maybe mountain ranges. And one is at the Gvul of Moab. And again, the people of Israel are about to enter to the land of Israel. And they're on the border of Moab. And the mountains on one side, which is on the Moab side, and the mountains on the other side, which is the side of Eretz Yisrael, those mountains somehow come together miraculously, and the enemies of the Jewish people get killed and crushed in between these two mountains. So if you have the copy that I gave out, he quotes here the following. He says, Al Kenya Omer B'Sefer Melchamas Hashem Es Vahev B'Sufa Ves HaNachalim Arnon. And then the next pasuk, which is pasuk Tesvav, says, V'Eshed HaNachalim Asher Natol Sheves Or V'Nish'an L'Gvul Moab Misham Be'era Hiya Be'era Asher Omer Hashem L'Moshe Sofes Ha'om Ve'et Melahem Moyen. So there are a whole bunch of miracles here that are alluded to in these very complicated psukim. There's the miracle of Yamsuf, there's the miracle of the Be'era Shel Miriam, the great waters of Miriam. And then the Torah actually says that just like after the great miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea, they recited Shira, so too, after the giving of the Mayim, the water from the Be'er Shel Miriam, there too, at that point they recited Shira, Oz Yashir Yisrael, Es HaShira Zos Ali Be'er Enu La, etc., etc. But in the miracle, in the middle of all these miracles, there's one other miracle that takes place. And that miracle is meant to shed light on the Pasuk Vahev Bisufa. And what is that great miracle? Rashi says, Shenishfach Sham Dam Amorim. The Amorites were killed over there. That's where their blood was spilled. And that's what's indicated by the Pasuk here. The Pasuk says, Ve'eshed Hanechalim. And what's the Eshed Hanechalim? It's Shefech Hanechalim. Something gets spilled into the valley, so to speak, between these two mountains. Shenishfach Sham Dam Amorim. So the Amorites were hiding there when they knew that the Jewish people were marching towards their border. V'hayu harim gvohim. Now she says there were very tall mountains. And nachal amok, and there was a deep valley in between. V'haharim, and there were two mountain chains on both sides, smuchim lezeh, and one was close to the other. Rashi says, Adam omid al har mizeh. They were so close to each other, these two mountains, that a person could stand on one mountain, umidavarim chaver b'harzeh, and he could speak to his friend who could hear him on the other mountain. Even though there was a nachal, there was a river that went in between. Amru Amorim, so the Amorim declared, kishi kansu Yisrael eretz Yisrael, when the Jewish people were entered to the land, they will go through this nachal. So what we're going to do is, at that point, we're going to come out of the caves in the mountains, the mountain range on this side, and we're going to attack them with chitzim and avnei blisteos, and we're going to attack them with missiles. This was the entire fantastical plan of the Moavim, who were hiding out in the mountain range. V'hayu osan hanekoyim bahar shel tzad Moav, u'bahar shel tzad Amorim, hayu keneged osan hanekoyim kimin kronos. So Rashi says that there were enemies hiding on both sides. Kevin shebo Yisrael Ava, when the Jewish people came to pass that land, nizdazeah har, the har on one side, on the Eretz Yisrael side, nizdazeah, it became awakened, so to speak. It started trembling. And kishivcha yotzeis lekabel pnei gvirta, like a maidservant that goes out to receive its mistress, niskarev letzad har shel Moav. So the harim of Eretz Yisrael became very close to the har shel Moav. V'nichnas osam hashadayim letoch osan nikoyim v'hargum. And those parts of the mountains that jut out, there were protrusions in the mountains, went into the holes in the cavities, the caves of the mountains of Moav. And at that point, nishpachu damam, and Rashi says this was a great Yeshua with this miracle that took place in Vav Bisufa. Now, what we want to understand is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu set it up in this way, this great miracle, to destroy, to crush the Amorim, because of the Akiras Har Shel Eretz Yisrael? Is there a deeper meaning here to the fact that the Har, the mountains of Israel, would be removed from their place, and they would join with the mountains, they would adhere themselves to the mountains of Moab? He says that there are many different ways that God could have brought about the destruction of the Amorim. Why did he choose this particular method where this mountain range would come and meet up with the other mountain range? Furthermore, he says the Pasuk Ves Vahav Bisufa here in Parshas Chukas is speaking about a nest that happened to Klal Yisrael when the Amorim were crushed by these mountain ranges that came together. But the Gemara in Kiddushin says a different shot. What is Ves Vahav Bisufa? Okay, now in order to appreciate the Gemara in Kiddushin, we're going to talk about the following phenomenon. I'm going to ask this as a kind of a question for you. When two people, two scholars or potential budding scholars, sit down and they learn together a piece of Gemara, are they in peace or are they enemies one to the other? What would you say? Have you ever walked into a yeshiva and, you know, where there are like many talmidim and try to listen and hear what you can? You probably can't hear a word. You know why? They're yelling at each other. That's what it looks like in a yeshiva. I don't know if you've ever had the experience. We should take a field trip. There's a yeshiva not far from here called Chevron Yeshiva in Givat Mordechai. And you'll go in there, you can't, you need earplugs. The volume is so high that people are yelling at each other. They're throwing shtenders at each other because each one has a different opinion. And the Gemara Kiddushin says that this is a natural phenomenon. And not only that the Pasuk in Tehillim actually describes this phenomenon. And this you'll see in the middle column, on the top of the middle column, Lo yevoshu, they're not humiliated. Ki yedabru es oivim b'shar. This shar, this gate, is where the enemies, the adversaries meet in a combat, is the shar of Limud Torah. And Reb Chiya embellishes this pasuk, and he says, afilu avin b'no, a father is learning with his son. Harav v'talmido, a Rebbe is learning with a talmid of his. Oskim b'torah b'shar echa, they're all at the same gate of Torah. But nasim oivim zelaz, they become enemies. I have to tell you, as a youngster, I used to learn with my father on occasion, and it always backfired on me because we used to get into such arguments, and then I'd feel guilty for like months, about what I may have said to my father in the middle of this debate. My father had the uncanny ability. Let's say we were learning a Ran on the Rif. In some mesechtas, the Ran on the Rif is humongous. Like in the Bavas, for example, you might have one line of riff, the Ran is on the side, and there are thousands of words in the Ran. And I got stuck with on the top line. My father, in the meantime, read the whole page while I was trying to figure out shot in the first line. And it was like all heck broke loose. The Gemara concludes the following, but there's a good news, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Ein uzazin misham, they don't separate each other, one from the other. At the end of this whole debate, Achenasim Oavim Zelazah, they become beloved one to the other. Now, how do we know that at the end of the day there's going to be love and compassion and embracing? Shenemar, because the pasuk here in Parshas Chukas Vesvav Besufa, the same exact pasuk, Al Tikri Besufa, which we interpreted means it's a reference to the Yamsuf, but rather Besufa, to the end. To the end of this whole debate or process of learning the Chavrusa, where they were Nasim, Sonim, Oivim, Zelazah. At the end, it's Vav. Vav, the word Vav means a Chibur, a connection between two things. Like, have you ever heard of Chazal about the Kruvim? The Kruvim were located on the top of the Aron.
With this piece, they face each other.
Correct, they used to embrace each other. So that embracement is called Vav in the language of the Bible. And Besufa is a reference to Sofa, which means at the end of this process in which they are studying Torah together in one shar, in one gate, and they became Oivim, now they become Oavim Zelazah. That's the Vav Besufa. Now, of course, we have a principle called Shivim Panim LaTorah. You can interpret the Torah in 70 different ways, and they're all true. But usually what we try to find is when we have different variant interpretations of a pasuk, some sort of common denominator. On the one hand, we're talking about destroying the enemies of the Jewish people when the mountains connect to each other. And that's the way Rashi interprets this pasuk of Vav Besuf. On the other hand, the Gemara says it's a reference to students and Rebbeim and Chavrusas that are studying Torah together, and they became Oivim, and now Vav Besuf, at the end of this discussion, they become Oivim Zelazet. It's a little bit interesting, the two roads here that diverge, how to interpret this pasuk. Let's call it Rashi. Rashi always says that his interpretation of the pasuk is what we call pshuto shel mikra. Rashi says, I'm going to give you the simple understanding of the pasuk, pshuto shel mikra. So let's assume, for argument's sake, the Pshuta Shemikra is referring to a miracle, because all these psukim are referring to various miracles that took place when the Jews left Egypt on their way to conquer Eretz Yisrael. And one of them is this great miracle of Vav Bisufa. And yet the Gemara is telling us, Alpi, not maybe Pshat, not Pshuta Shal Mikra, Alpi Drash, that this pasuk is referring to the Hischabrus, the connection between two people that are studying Torah together, that are Oskim V'Torah, that first become Oivim, and finally at the end of the process become Oavim Zelosa. So how does that connect with the Pshuta Shal Mikra, which Rashi explains is the great miracle of the destruction of our enemies, of the Moavios and the Amorim, in this pasuk? Okay, so in order to kick off our study for today, we're going to talk about the following. Should I ask this to you as a quiz question and see if you get it right? Here, I'm going to try this. You know,
you
can always try. Just feel comfortable. Where is a person greater in terms of his relationship to the study of Torah? I'm going to give you two options. Okay, so it's a multiple choice. I'm not going to create any false answers that sound right. You know, it's just A or B, and so you have a 50% chance of giving the right answer. There's a Torah student who's studying Torah in Chutz Laaretz. Let's say in the classical case, in the Gemara's context, it would be Bavel, in Babylonia, as we say. And then you have his counterpart who's studying Torah in the land of Israel. Who's greater in his study of Torah? Again, assuming all things are equal, you know, they're both, you know, intellectually capable, they're both dedicated and motivated, they're both the same age bracket, they have the same experience in learning, the same knowledge. But just as a start-off point, here's the, you know, they're at the, you know, what do you call it in a race when they shoot the gun off? What's it called? The the starting point, you know, when they all start running, you know, the runners take off.
Quick draw,
it's called. So at the quick draw, there are two people lined up here. There's the Ben Eretz Yisrael and the Ben Chutz Laaretz, and they're both dedicated to studying of Torah. Who's going to be more successful? Who's greater?
Well, mitzvahs are magnified in Eretz Yisrael.
Okay, so that's a general halacha of mitzvahs. But I'll have you know that with regard to the study of Torah, Johnny, there's a special quality to Eretz Yisrael that makes the person who studies Torah and Eretz Yisrael superior to his counterpart in the Chutz Laaretz.
That's what I'm saying. It's magnified. Whatever we do is magnified.
Correct, but I'm just saying, magnified is a general halacha that applies to all mitzvahs. But in Talmud Torah, which is an intellectual mitzvah to comprehend the Torah and achieve in Torah knowledge, there's a special halacha of Eretz Yisrael. Here it has a special role. You're right, Eretz Yisrael filters out, it has a general role with regard to all mitzvahs, but very heavy when it comes to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. How do we know this? So this is a Gemara in Masechta Ksubis, which is the middle of your middle column. And the Gemara is talking about Rav Huna. Rav Huna, who was one of the early Amoraim in Bavel, he played the role as the Rashiv in Bavel. You won't believe how many people participated in his daily class in Bavel. Would you say 10? I mean, more than we have here in the room, we'll say 10, 100, 800 students. Okay, they're all listening, you know, from the hanging on to every word of Rav Huna. And because of the massive amount of Talmidim, Rav Huna felt compelled to set up Amoraim. Now, you know the word Amora, which is the opposite of a Tana, but the word Amora itself actually means, I'm going to use a phrase that you'll laugh at, but a foghorn. They didn't have microphones in those days. So what they did is they set up an Amora. Then the job of the Amora was to listen to the shiur. He sat up front, and then he would belt it out. He would project his voice, something that the Rebbe couldn't do because it would absolutely exhaust him and kill his vocal cords. And this way everyone could listen, and then if people had questions, then the Amora would field those questions and bring it back to the Rebbe.
So did they have a few that they've taken too? They couldn't do that all day long, the same person.
Generally speaking, every Rosh Hashiva who would say a shiur for an hour or two or three had one Amora. In the case of Rav Huna, because he had to project the shiur to 800 students, he set up no less than 13 different Amorim. So that's what the Gemara says, Hamidoresh B'Tleisar Amoroi. In other words, he gave the shiur, and who were the middle guys, you know, the intermediaries? There were 13 miturgamim. What they would do is they would translate his words into a language that was much easier and more acceptable for the student.
All done on the spot. So
right, spontaneous. Now, I don't know how they would divide up into 13 areas. That the Gemara doesn't go into the logistics of it. But in any event, this is what the Gemara says. Now, the Gemara says that in order for these 800 students to hear the class, what they did was they took clothing. I think the word clothing here means a large cloth. I don't think it means, you know, with sleeves and what do you call it, buttons. But anyway, they would take a cloth and they would spread it out on the ground. And each one of these 800 students would sit down on his glima, it's called in Aramaic, his cloth. Now, what happens when you put cloth on ground? Again, we're not talking about like balato, the way we have it today with how do you say it in English, shayish, marble or anything like that.
Yes,
yeah, it gets full of dust. And the Gemara tells us that when the shiur was over, the Talmidim would stand and they would shake out these, again, the word is glima. Glima literally means a beged, but really what it means is some sort of a cloth. And as a result, the dust went up to the sky. And a miracle would take place on a daily basis. And what would happen? The avak would go all the way up towards the sun, and it would travel towards the land of Israel. Again, Rav Huna is in Babylonia. And what would happen is that as a result of this, so to speak, covering over the sun, it's kind of like a cloud, the rains would start falling down in Eretz Yisrael. So imagine the impact of Rav Huna and his 800 Talmidim. You know, in Eretz Yisrael we need a lot of rain, which we don't get so much. But as a result, this started a whole process, miraculously, of bringing down the rain.
We had a few drops last night,
right? I think even today they may have a few drops, which is wild. You know, we're in June here in Israel. It never rains in June. Now, this Gemara, which is in Masechet Ksuvos, is what you call an agadic Gemara. Agadita means when there are no halachic implications or repercussions, but it's something more inspirational, more symbolic or maybe historical, to tell you about what went on in Jewish life, to interpret psukim. Now, there are many commentaries on Agadita, but there are very few that have survived, so to speak, meaning most of the commentaries on the Agadita just fell by the wayside over the course of Jewish history. So you can still find them in libraries, but they're not popularly looked at. And Yaakov, you're wonderful, is an anthology of commentaries on the Agadita. There's also the Marsha. My father told me that back in his day, they never learned without the Marsha. Every Agadita, they had to go through the Marsha with a fine-tooth comb. Maralbi Prague took it upon himself to try. See, Agadita is like a closed book. You know, we don't have the code. You know, we don't have the magical methods of deciphering the code, of the deeper meaning of these Agaditas. But in later Jewish history, more coming closer to contemporary Jewish life, there's one commentary on Agadita which became extremely popular to this day. And that's called the Ben Yehoyada. He was the great giant of Torah Jewry in Iraq. And he's more famous for under a different name of another book, that's how he's known, the Ben Ish Chai. Perhaps you heard of him. But his commentary on Agadita, all of Ashas, is called Ben Yehoyada. And we're going to take a look at his commentary on this particular Gemara at the end of Masechet Ksuvos regarding Rav Huna and the Talmidim and all the dust that went up to the sky. And he says the following. He says, this is all Bederech Nes. Everything that happened at the time of Rav Huna's teaching was miraculous. And it was all part of what we call the kavod of Rav Huna, the great respect for Rav Huna, the great Rosh Hashiva, and kavod HaTzibur, and for kavod to all this great massive myriads of students that studied by Rav Huna. And he says, b'derech hateva, it's impossible that the dust that would come up from Bavel would appear, would travel all the way to Eretz Yisrael, which was many days of journey away from Bavel. And even if you get together, he says, 800 students who are dusting their clothes off, it's impossible for this to occur, that the dust should go all the way to Eretz Yisrael. It could only be carried. It's like you remember the flying carpets, you know, back in the Alibaba, and you know, that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But unfortunately for us, the Ben Yehoyada doesn't tell us what this miracle is all about. So what we want to study here is a piece from the Maralmi Prague, as I told you, one of the three great commentaries on Agadita, the Marsha, and the Ben Yehoyada, the Ben Ish Chai, and the Maral. He has a commentary on the Agadah. And he says the following. Hakavana Bazeh, the deeper meaning of this story of this great miracle is Bizchus Esek Torosam Shel Bnei Bavel Talmidi Rabbi Rav Huna. This is a great merit for the masses of Talmidim of Rav Huna, the great Rav Huna in Bavel, that when they stood up and they shook out these begadim that they used as a kind of a mattress, if you will, and the avak now spreads all the way over, these you know, massive amounts of dirt or dust go up to Shamayim, they become clouds, he says, that will block a little bit the view of the sun. And these clouds would travel from Bavel all the way to Eretz Yisrael to bring down Gishmei Bracha, to bring down these rains of great blessing to the people of Israel. And he goes on and he says the following, that there was Rav Chia, says that I heard about these clouds in Eretz Yisrael. And the people in Eretz Yisrael would declare, Nelech, let's go, Venite Mayim, and let's pour the waters, Eitzel Amon Umoav. What's this all about? And Rabbi Chia would pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Nasata Torah Liamcha Yisrael, you gave the people of Israel Torah, Chazarta Al Kol Umal Sa'ola V'lo Kibluha, none of the nations of the world were willing to accept the Torah. V'achshav, and now, what are you going to do? You're going to bring rain to the land of Israel. I'm sorry. You're going to bring these clouds to bring rain down somewhere on the face of the globe. Shidu hacha, bring down the rains here in Eretz Yisrael. This is the land that's designated to the people who did accept your Torah. And as a result of the prayers of Rav Chia, Shadua Aduch Tayeu, the Ananim came to Eretz Yisrael, and they brought these Gishmei Bracha from Rav Huna's collection, his yeshiva in Bavel, to the land of Israel. In other words, the Maral Prague recognizes the fact that these Anane Gishamim, these clouds, were full with precipitation, with water. They came from Bavel, and this is clear, all the way to Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, the Bnei Eretz Yisrael also appreciated that these Anane Gishamim came from Bavel, in the Zchus of the Torah of Rav Huna and his students. And at this point, we would think that the people of Eretz Yisrael were supported by which Torah? The Torah in Eretz Yisrael, the Torah in Bavel? In Bavel. Because again, where was Rav Huna? Rav Huna was in Bavel, teaching 800 students in Bavel. And miraculously, the Avak is going to turn into clouds that are going to travel to still supply the land of Israel miraculously with rains.
But it doesn't necessarily take away from the course of the learning in Eretz Israel. It's just from Bavel, there is a certain merit, the water, the rains was coming.
Right, but it's a, in other words, what the Shvilei Pinchas is trying to develop here, if I can explain.
Yeah, no, it's an opposite. But normally, all the mitzvahs having done in Israel overflows to the rest
correct
of the world here from Bava's game.
Correct. He's going to try to prove that there's a paradox here. And what is that paradox? That on the one hand, again, we haven't gotten to it yet, but that's going to be on page 2. He's going to prove from many different sources that the Torah in Eretz Yisrael is superior to the Torah in Bavel. But he's going to quote other sources which seem to indicate the opposite. That somehow the Torah of Bavel is on the highest level and Eretz Yisrael is only, in a sense, a reflected image.
Right, but does it necessarily mean that? Just because learning in Bavel is providing schut or, you know, providing good for Eretz Yisrael, that doesn't mean it's on a higher level than the learning.
What I want you to do, Johnny, is I want you to reserve judgment. What do I mean? Let's see, if you give the man a little time, how he is going to convince us. Again, we're going to fight against him, but is he going to convince us at the end of the day that there's something superior about the Torah study of Bavel that we don't find with regard to Torah in Eretz Yisrael? And if he convinces you of that after the multiple sources that he quotes, you're going to be perplexed, we're all going to be perplexed, because he's going to prove to you on the other end of the scale, of the spectrum, that the Torah of Eretz Yisrael is superior to the Torah of Bavel. So that he's setting for himself a tremendous challenge here, because if we agree that there are sources that take us this direction and other sources take the other direction, is there any way of reconciling this? Which we call, I'm going to use the Yiddish phrase, it's called Tzvei Dinim. Have you heard of Tzvei Dinim?
My Yiddish isn't so great.
Yiddish. But you know, do you know how to count in Yiddish to the number 3? Ants?
Zwei.
Zwei, dry. So you did it. So zwei dinim means two dinim, meaning they're going to be two dimensions. Again, I'm setting up the framework for his chiddush. It's a marvelous chiddush. I hope you'll stay with me until we finish. He's going to, if you can. He's going to try to say that from one perspective, one dimension, the Torah in Eretz Yisrael is superior to that of Bavel. Bavel representing Chutz Laaretz. But from another perspective, the Torah in Chutz Laaretz is superior to that of Eretz Yisrael. Very complicated achievement. You know, this is going to be, if at the end of the day we sign on to this, it's going to be a very complicated achievement, very revolutionary. So I want to get you psyched up for it, you know. And it's going to have an impact on our understanding of Torah study. Okay, then? So far we have the miracle of the clouds that supply Eretz Yisrael with rain that are coming from the Torah of Rav Huna.
So, it's a quick question. Did that mean there was rain every day in Eretz Yisrael because of that? Or it like built up and was leaking?
I guess during that period of time. I don't know exactly how long of a period of time Rav Huna...
Yeah, but while he was learning, was it...
Right, I think if rain? I'm not... What is the... I hear something ringing here. Anyway, I think the period of time of Rav Huna, if I'm not mistaken, was a... Well... A lot of action here today. Yeah. Was, I think, approximately 40 years, if I'm not mistaken. Well, anyway.
Oh. Yeah.
Now, we're learning that Gemara in Ksuvos, and the Gemara says the following. Now, again, the Gemara that we started with in Ksuvos, just to reiterate, is on Daf Kuf Vav, which is 106. Now we're going backwards to page 75, Ayin He. Omar Abaye says the following. Chad minayhu. Now again, where is Abaye? In Bava, right? Abaye is one of the great scholars of Bava. Chad minayhu. He says, one of us. Okay. Odif kitrei minon. So again, Abaye is in Bava. And he says about the Chachmei Torah, the great scholars in Eretz Yisrael, that one of them is worth two of us. So if you put on a scale, on one side of the scale you place a Ben Eretz Yisrael, one of the scholars of Israel, and on the other side of the scale, in order to weigh them down in a kind of a seesaw, you're going to need to put two scholars from Bavel. One scholar in Eretz Yisrael is as great as two scholars of Bavel. Then Rava adds the following comment. This is on the top of your second page. Amar Rava, v'chad minan, but if one of us, ki solik lahasam, goes to Eretz Yisrael, adif kitrei minayu, we're worth two of them. When Rav Yirmiya was here in Chutz Laretz, because Rav Yirmiya ultimately settled in Eretz Yisrael, he didn't know what was going on. When the Bnei Eretz Yisrael would come into Bavel and teach Torah, he couldn't comprehend it. It was way beyond his level of comprehension. When he got to Eretz Yisrael and he studied Torah in Israel, he declared that these guys in Bavel are tipshay, which literally means they're idiosyncratic. You know, they're on a much lower level. So Rava says, what happened? He says, what happened is the following, that as long as he's in Chutz Laretz, he's not worth half of one of them. In other words, one Ben Eretz Yisrael is worth two of Bnei Chutz Laretz, but when one of the Bnei Chutz Laretz makes Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, he's now worth two of the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. Which means that if a Ben Chutz Laretz makes Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, what's the ratio now?
2 to 1.
What would be his ratio to a person in Chutz Laretz who stays in Chutz Laretz?
2 to 1.
What do you say?
2 to 1.
No, 4 to 1. Again, as long as you're in Chutz Laretz, you're worth half of one, right? One of Ben Eretz Yisrael is worth two Bnei Bavel. We're talking about Torah scholars, right? Now, one Ben Bavel who makes Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael is worth two of Bnei Eretz Yisrael. So what would that, Rabbi Yirmiya, after he makes Aliyah, what would he, his ratio to one of the Bnei Chutz Laretz who didn't make Aliyah be 1 to 4? Okay, then? Comes along the Ben Yehoyada, remember we started with the Ben Ishchai, and he says the following. He says that when a Ben Bavel goes on to study Torah in Eretz Yisrael, he's considered like 4 Bnei Bavel. Again, he goes through the mathematics here that we just went through. In other words, he multiplies his significance by 4. He's worth, he himself, Rabbi Yirmiya, now by going on Aliyah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, he's worth 400% of what he was worth before. And now Ben Yehoyada wants to shed light on a pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Dvarim. Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ebra na, I want to cross the Jordan. V'eres ha'aretz ha'tovin, I want to see the good land. Moshe Rabbeinu has this tremendous craving to enter into the land. Why? Says the Ben Yehoyada, because he wants to achieve Torah's Eretz Yisrael. He wants to get that level of Torah and Eretz Yisrael. All the Torah that Moshe studied was where? In the Midbar in Chutz Laretz. Moshe wanted to go over the, enter into the land, in order that he could achieve the ability to study Torah in the land of Israel, which again would be worth 200%, though it's even double his value. So you see that the study of Torah in the land of Israel is worth twice the study of Torah in Chutz Laretz, and that's why the Gemara said before that a Ben Eretz Yisrael is equal to 2 people in Chutz Laretz. And number 2, the Gemara says in Babas, a very famous Gemara, Avira di Eretz Yisrael Machkin. Correct? The air and the atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael gives Chachma. Says the Ben Yehoyada that the word Evra, which is Moshe Rabbeinu's opening prayer, opening word in his prayer, he says if you rearrange the letters, it's Arba. It becomes 4. Says the Ben Yehoyada that Moshe Rabbeinu, if he would go to Eretz Yisrael, he would multiply himself by 400,000, by 400%. And therefore he said Ebra, which is the same as Arba, you just have to change the resh, just the sequence of the letters. Wow. So Moshe Rabbeinu want to, how do you say in English times 4, is that called quadruple? Yeah. Did I get that right? Moshe Rabbeinu would quadruple his level, 400%, 4 times greater, by entering to the land. That's the remnants of the word Ebra, which is the same exact letters in a different sequence as Arba, to multiply himself by 4.
So when Moshe Rabbeinu was on Har Sinai, learning all the Torah from Kadosh Baruch
Hu, right?
So it was not the same Torah.
Not the Torah as Eretz Yisrael. That was the Torah of Chutz Laretz.
Even though he wasn't on earth, he was in Shemayim in some kind of spiritual realm.
Okay,
anyway.
Maybe that's an interesting perspective. You're just saying that maybe Eretz Yisrael and the Shemayim is some sort of connection. I don't know.
But not, just not, not just that, learning on the spiritual realm, whether he was, could be by,
right, and he was by he wasn't in Chutz Laretz, he was above Chutz Laretz, yeah. He was on a higher level.
Maybe that's why he didn't understand what Rabbi Akiva understood.
Right. In the Gemara Menachos, he was in the back row, and he was overwhelmed by what Rabbi Akiva was saying. He couldn't figure out what the man was saying until he finally said, Allah Lamosh Bissina, and then he got calmed down. But again, Rabbi Osei, you're beginning to see the perplexing, shall we say, paradox here, because on the one hand, it was Rav Huna and his Torah and his students in Chutz Laretz that was supplying rain in Eretz Yisrael. What about the Torah in Eretz Yisrael? On the other hand, the Gemara is saying that a Ben Eretz Yisrael is worth two B'nei Chutz Laretz. A third Gemara says that Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machim, there's some special school or some, shall we say, mystical quality to the atmosphere in Eretz Yisrael that adds Chokhmah. But yet, the Gemara says that, and again, Moshe Rabbeinu's entire craving was to enter into the land, and yet the Gemara says that when a Ben Chutz Laretz goes to Eretz Yisrael, he's worth twice as much as a Ben Eretz Yisrael, which is obviously the result of the Darga, of the Milah that he achieved by studying Torah and Chutz Laretz. So the whole thing is a big mess over here. So how do we understand this? On the one hand, we're saying that somebody who studies Torah in Bavel and then he goes on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, he's even greater than the B'nai Eretz Yisrael. But on the other hand, we're saying Avir Eretz Yisrael Machkim, and it seems like a Ben Eretz Yisrael's worth two, Shakel connected two in Chutz Laretz. So he quotes the Shita Mekubetzes, that's a super commentary on Masechet Ksuvos. And he says the following, that when a person comes from Chutz Laretz, a scholar again, to Eretz Yisrael, he's worth two B'nai Eretz Yisrael. He says that the Avira, this special, unique, metaphysical power of the atmosphere of Eretz Yisrael, Mesayeh Abahem, helps him very much to achieve Hasagos, you know, comprehensions of Torah. So that's called Avira Eretz Yisrael Machkim. However, he writes, again, this is one of the Rishonim. If I could borrow a pen from someone, I just have to underline this because it's. I don't know who's this, yours or somebody else's. Okay, I'll give it right back to you. He says that Einam Regilim Lilmod Kol Kach BeCharifus Kimo Ben Bnei Bov. Again, if I would say this, you would put me into excommunication. You know, and you'd be rightfully saying this, but here's one of the Rishonim, the Rivash, quoted by the Shita Mekubetzes, and he says that in Eretz Yisrael, the limud, the style, the methodology of studying Torah, is not the same as it is in Bavel. Bavel, he says, is represented by charifus, which literally means sharp. You know, you could use the word sharp to describe an onion or something. You could use the word sharp to describe a method of studying Torah. And he says the greatness of studying Torah dafka outside of Eretz Yisrael, like for example in Bnei Bavel, is called Charifus HaTorah. And a person who works very hard in Chutz Laretz, he's an expert, he has mastered the methodology called Charifus HaTorah. In Eretz Yisrael, he says, on the other hand, it's a different kind of a style. It's a natural kind of, shall we say, intuitive or a natural feeling for the understanding of the Torah. That's a result of Avira de Eretz Yisrael, this precipitation of the air of Eretz Yisrael. And he says, therefore, when a Ben Bavel comes on Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, he brings with him what he has, which the Ben Eretz Yisrael is missing, but he gains now what the Ben Eretz Yisrael has. So you have these two modes of studying Torah. And he's saying the following, that he's used to studying Torah in Bavel with what we call the Charifus of Torah. However, he's missing that tremendous aid, if you will, to give you insights in Torah based on the Avira de Eretz Yisrael. And now he has both together. A plus B. And he says the following. What is it about, on the one hand, Avira d'Eretz Yisrael that makes the person who studies in Eretz Yisrael superior to the one in Bavel? But then, on the other hand, the one in Bavel has a certain element of superiority insofar as he has the Charifus of Torah. And he says the following, that what typifies study Torah, it's the study of Torah in Chutz Laretz, is that, you remember that word that we used before called sonim zelazeh, that there's a certain kind of animosity. So now he quotes a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara has a pasuk in Zechariah that says, "V'ekach li shnei maklos, li echad karasi noam, li echad karasi chovlim." So Zechariah Novi speaks about two staffs. How do you pronounce it? A staff, Johnny?
Staff.
Staff. I would say staff, but that sounds American. But for the Brits, I'm not from Manchester, but I aspire to be from Manchester, so we could be good friends.
Don't we all?
So that would be not a staff, but a stop, or something along that line. I'm trying to get it down. I'm not
tomato, tomato.
So he says the following: what do these two staffs symbolize? One he calls Noam, which means pleasantness, and the other he calls Chovlim. Chovlim are those who fight with each other. They're in a boxing match. Noam, he says, that's the illusion. That's the symbolic representation of Eretz Yisrael. That when Talmidei Chachamim study Torah in Eretz Yisrael, Mani'imim Zelazeh, they give a sweetness to each other. There's a comfortable feeling that we're moving on together. But Talmidei Chachamim Bavel are Chovlim. They are boxing one to the other. They're angry at each other. So we see clearly that when we talk about Avira de Eretz Yisrael Machkim, that element of Chachma that comes through the school of power, the special power of the Avir of Eretz Yisrael, creates a certain ni'imut, a certain sweetness in the way they study Torah. But in contrast, in Chutz Laretz, where it's all a matter of charifus, you know, of what we call pilpul, you know, this dialectic and the didactics of studying and analyzing the sugya, creates a certain tension, a certain machablim zenzeh. And the Gemara then goes on and says that studying Torah in Bavel can be subject to the description in Eicha. You know that in Eicha we're not going to find too many good things. It's all pretty much negative. And the pasuk says, "B'machshakim hoshivani kimasei olam," that God placed us into darkness, meaning when He exiled us and destroyed the Migdash, we were sent out to the Golus. We were existing in a state of darkness. Obviously, we're talking about spiritual darkness. That the studying of Torah in Bavel is studying Torah in a dark place. Rashi says, why is it so dark and dismal to study Torah in Bavel? That they really fight each other. There's no sense of noam or nochius. And therefore, they're always in a state of flux and confusion, which is called mechablim zed zeh ba'alocha. That's called b'machshakim hoshivani. So again, there are so many sources that indicate that the Torah of Eretz Yisrael is superior to that of Bavel. Eretz Yisrael machkima, the Avir is machkim. Moshe Rabbeinu is craving to enter the land to achieve Torah's Eretz Yisrael. A ben Eretz Yisrael is considered worth two b'nei Bavel. And in Bavel, the Torah study is described as Chovlim Zebazer, in one of the two staffs of Zechariah's Nevuah. They're fighting each other and battling each other. There's no Ne'imut as there is in Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, the Pasuk in Eicha describes the study of Torah in Bavel as B'machshakim, that I'm in the shadows of darkness when I study in Chutz Laretz. And Rashi says, Ein Nochim Zelazeh, Mechablim Zelazeh. They're fighting each other. So Rabosai, if we had to stop here, with the one exception of the Gemara that we had in Ksubis about Rav Huna and his Talmidim, leave that out for a moment. Clearly, we would conclude that the Torah in Chutz Laretz in Bavel is superior to that of Eretz Yisrael. I'm sorry, that the Torah in Eretz Yisrael is superior to that of the Torah in Bavel in Chutz Laretz. And here's where he drops the bomb question. We have two Talmudim. One is the Talmud of Yerushalayim, the Talmud Yerushalmi, and the other is the Talmud Bavel. If there's a discrepancy between the two, in a halachic issue, who do we paskin like? Anybody know?
Bavli.
Like the Bavli, excellent. And the Rif codifies this rule at the beginning of Masechta Chulin, and he writes, we follow the Talmud Bavli. He's talking about a specific case of Basar B'chola. And he says, the Basar B'nei Bavel Garinan. Garinan means we always are dragged along by the Talmud of Bavli. The Rush, there in Chulin, mentions this Rif and he codifies this. And he wants to say that, as a general rule, if there's a machlokas between the Bavli and the Yushalmi, we paskin like the Bavli. Tosfos says in Avodah Zarah, Onanim Shochim Achar B'nei Bavel V'Talmudon. And the Rosh says, Kol Minhagenu K'B'nei Bavel. Whenever there's a discrepancy, we're going to follow the Minhag of B'nei Bavel. And the Rosh in Masechta Erevin writes, Kevan de sugyan de gemar di dan la hetera. Our sugya here in the Bavli is matir. Lo ich paslan, we don't care. My di asrei de gemar de bnei marav, even though the Talmud Yushalmi is mach. It's an amazing principle. Al gemar di lan, on our Bavli, samchinan, we will always rely on our gemara. And he says, "V'inu havi b'ki b'gemara de bnei marava tfei minan v'ilav de kaimel and lahai memra de bnei marava lavs de smachni lo kashori inhu." We're going to rely on the poskim that accept the Talmud Bavli against the Yushalmi. And by the way, the Gemara is very famous to say that the latest period of Horah, which is called the end of the Chesimas HaTalmud of the Gemara, is Ravina Ravashi. They are called Sof Horah. They organize the entire Talmud Bavli. And we're always going to accept the Halacha like the Chachmei Bavel. That's called Sof Horah. Gemara Bava Basra, Sof Horah, Ravina Ravashi, Sof Horah. Because there was no Gemara that was written in an organized way until Ravina Ravashi did that editing work. And therefore, whenever there was a question regarding a Mishnah that came up in the Beis Medrash, or any Halacha L'maisa question in Dini Mominos and Dini Issa V'Heter, each one would say his reasoning. Ravashi and Ravina would organize all the arguments back and forth, and then they would set up all the Masechtas on a certain Seder, and that's how we're going to pask. And the Rambam, you know, has a massive introduction to his great magnum opus called the Mishnah Torah. And in his introduction, he writes, and you'll see this on the top of page 3, Nimtza Me Rav Ashi Ad Moshe Rabbeinu. If you go backwards in history, from Rav Ashi all the way up to Moshe Rabbeinu, were 40 generations. And Ravina Rav Ashi and their colleagues were the end of Chachmei, of the Gedolei Chachmei Yisrael, who would pass on the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law. And any gzeros that we find in the Gemara, any takonos, any minhagos that we find in the Gemara, Poshta, says the Rambam, gzerosim v'takonosim minhagesim b'chol Yisrael, as it was written in the Talmud Bavli, it spread through all of Israel, b'chol makomos moshroseyem, and that's how we accept all the gzeros, the takonos, the minhagos, based on the Talmud Bavli that was closed by Ravina Ravashi. And the Rambam goes on to say that anything in the Bavli, all of Bnei Yisrael have to follow the Bavli, the Kofin, Kol Ir, Kol Medina, Medina, every country on the face of the earth, every city on the face of the earth, we force them, we compel them to be knowing all the Minhagos and the Gzeros and the Takonos like the Talmud Bavli, because anything that's in the Gemara means that there's a haskama, there's an agreement, Kol Yisrael. And again, this further emphasizes the strength and the power of Bavel and the study of Torah in Bavel. Now, Rabbi Yochanan himself, by the way, he was from Eretz Yisrael. He's one of the great leaders of Eretz Yisrael. And he organized and edited the Talmud Yushalmi. But yet the Rambam writes that Rav Ashi, who was again at the end of the period of Talmud Bavli, Chibra Agmara Bavlis, the Eretz Shinar, in Bavel, in Babylonia, he organized and edited the Talmud Bavli. Achar Shechibra Rav Yochanan Agmara Yushalmis, a full century later, so the Yushalmi predates the Bavli by a century. And nevertheless, Rav Yochanan himself in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Chav Dalet speaks about the greatness of the Talmud Bavli. And he says that if you want to set up a daily discipline of learning Torah for every day, your curriculum should be made up of three parts of the Torah. Number one, Mikra, you should study the Chumash itself. Then you should study Mishnah, and then finally Gemara. And Rabbi Yochanan says you can fulfill all three by studying the Talmud Bavli. Because the Talmud Bavli is Blua. The Bavel is not just Babylonia, but it's also Blua. Blua means it's comprised of a mixture of Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud. And Tosis says in the name of Rabbi Nutam that we only study the Talmud Bavli, and how do we get away with this halach that requires us to split our time on a daily basis to three different disciplines, Mikra, Mishnah, and Talmud, is based on this statement of Rabbi Yochanan, who lauds and praises the Talmud Bavli, that is bolul, that it's considered an integration, a mixture of all three elements. So what's going on here? On the one hand, we have Avir Eretz Yisrael Machkim. We have a sentence in the Gemara statement, Ein Torah k'Torah Eretz Yisrael. There's no Torah like the Torah in Eretz Yisrael. We have Moshe Rabbeinu desiring to get into Eretz Yisrael. And yet, on the other hand, we're talking about the Talmud Bavli that by far surpasses in its greatness and its significance the Talmud Yerushalmi. So the Shvilei Pinchas, based on that Rivash that we mentioned earlier that said that in Bavel they're involved in Charifus, he develops the following thesis. The Pasuk says in Yeshayahu HaNavi, Ki mitzion teitzei sorah, dvar Hashem Yerushalayim. Why? And he says the following, that on the one hand, the key to succeed in Torah learning, the success in Torah learning, is what we call Yegiya b'Torah, working very hard in understanding the Torah. The Gemara says in Megillah Daf Vav, if a person comes forward and says that Yogati, I worked very hard in Torah, Velo Matzasi, but I didn't understand the Torah, Al Tame, don't believe him. Send him back to work even harder. Lo Yogati Matzasi, if he claims I didn't do any work, but I understand the Torah, don't believe him. Only if he says Yogati Matzasi, he really reached the level of Yigiyah, he put in the tremendous amount of effort, and he discovered it, he clarified the meaning of the Torah, then time, and then you believe. In other words, there's a certain element of success in Torah study that's contingent upon Yigiyah b'Torah. Without Yigiyah b'Torah, don't believe him. Comes along the Shvilei Pinchas, and he says that when we saw the Gemara says that in Bavel it's the Machshakim Oshivani, the Poskin Eicha, that it's we're learning Torah in the darkness. The Gemara means to say that we're so far away from the spiritual lights that give us in Eretz Yisrael an intuition to study the Torah. Avir Eretz Yisrael Machkim. We're in the darkness, and therefore, what do we have to do to compensate for the fact that we don't have that light of Eretz Yisrael?
Work hard.
Exactly, work hard. He gave the Torah, and he says the following: that if you take a look at a pasuk in Yeshayahu HaNavi, it says, Ha'am holchim b'choshech, ra'u or gadol. They saw a great light. They were going in darkness. And the Gemara says that what is this pasuk referring to? Actually, it's not a Gemara. It's a Tanchuma, a Medrash Tanchuma in Parashas Noach, very famous Medrash. And the Medrash is saying that when the people are going in darkness, all of a sudden they see an or gadol. This is a metaphor for the Balei HaTalmud, those who are working very hard in darkness to try to understand the Talmud. I remember when I was a student in yeshiva, very often I would come into shir, you know, and I prepared the Gemara with my chavrusa, and we were in the darkness. We really didn't know what was going on. And the Rebbe would clarify things. He says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meir Einayim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to shed a light. But again, the greatest light comes through darkness. And as a result of this darkness, you work very hard, overtime, in the choshech, in the darkness of Chutz Laretz. And then, there's a certain light that breaks through the darkness. And this is the introduction of the Netziv, the great Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, of the greatest yeshiva perhaps of all time, which is called the Volozhin Yeshiva. And he authored a book called the Shiltas and the Netziv. In his introduction to the Shiltas, he writes based on the Gemara Sanhedrin that we mentioned earlier, the Machshakim El Shivani, that's the Limud Torah in Bavel. He says, Lo sheginu chas v'shalom talmid bavli. Don't misunderstand and say that the Gemara was saying bignus, they were talking disparagingly about the Talmud Bavli. Elohachi kamer. This is what the Gemara means. V'asher bavel hu mitzula chashecha she'en ba'or Torah b'etzem haklal. He says that really in truth there's no light, there's no spiritual pure light that comes into bavel. Rak, with the exception of the pilpul, the harifus of the Shas Bavli. Meaning when we work hard in the Shas Bavli, that's what's going to open up in this darkness a light, a beacon of light that's going to come from on high. And why and how do we achieve that goal in Bavel? As we saw in the name of Rabbi Yochanan earlier, because Bolul integrates Mikra and Mishnah and Gemara. We have to work hard with a pilpul shel Torah lahotzi, amkus haTorah li'or, to understand the Torah. But as a result, the Talmud Bavli, through all this tremendous effort and work, became the more superior Talmud. And therefore, lahagdil Torah, the godless of Torah, was even greater in Bavel than it was in Eretz Yisrael. So on the one hand, I mean, just to, again, I see we only got half through this essay, and I apologize for that. Sorry, I try to do the best I can. But the basic thrust of what he's saying, or shall we say, at least we'll get the framework, we'll leave out some of the nitty-gritty details, is that the Talmud Bavli, Dafka, because Bavel is called Machshakim, and it requires of us to put in so much work, like the Gemara says on the Pasuk here at the beginning of our parasha, Zos Chukas HaTorah, Adam Ki Yomus Ba'oel, Ein Divrei Torah Miskaimel B'misha Memis Atzmo. A person has to work hard, kill himself for the understanding of Torah. I don't mean literally suicide. But it's Machshakim Oshivani, we're stuck in Golus, we don't have the R, that natural light of Avira, the Eretz Yisrael Machkim. We have to work very, very hard, over time, but as a result, a certain kind of light, a beacon of light, so to speak, a ray of light that breaks through the darkness is even more of a light, a greater light qualitatively than midday in the middle of the summer. So the Talmid Chacham of Bavel, in order to break through and analyze a sugya in Gemara, in Talmud, they have to become fighters, you know, boxers, you remember Chavlim Zetzer. You know, they're throwing shtenders and yelling at each other because they're trying to figure out, they're racking their brains, and each one came up with his insight and the other with his insight. In Eretz Yisrael, where there's Avira to Eretz Yisrael, you don't need that emphasis on Harifus and Pilpul, and therefore comes more intuitively and naturally, as we said before. And they don't have to fight each other. They work together as a Chavrusa bin Imus. And they see the R of Eretz Yisrael, which is absolutely clear, that lightens up the pathway to understand the Torah. They don't need all the pilpul. But on the other hand, when we speak about the superiority, when we speak about Rav Huna and his 800 Talmidim, or when we speak about the Gemara Ksuvos, that one from Bavel that comes to Eretz Yisrael is worth two of Eretz Yisrael, and we talk about the fact that we always passed like the Talmud Bavli against the Yerushalmi, all of that is a result of the special level of Yegiyah B'Torah, of working so hard because of Machshakim, because in Bavel there's nothing intuitive and there's nothing natural that shows you the way. In Bavel, that extra overtime work is the Yegiyah, and that dimension of Yegiyah B'Torah paradoxically is going to generate a kind of Torah that's even deeper, more profound, and more reliable in Halacha than Torah's Eretz Yisrael. So we're again trying to figure out, I don't know if any of you have ever heard of a German philosopher called Hegel. So he was famous for what's called the Hegelian dialectic, which is called thesis, antithesis. Here's a real example of a dialectic. You know, on the one hand, Eretz Yisrael seems to be superior. We have so many proofs for that. On the other hand, Bavel seems to be superior. We have so many proofs for that. But the answer is that each one has its own dimension and contributes a very special element to the study of Torah. One is the natural beauty and simplicity, if you will, of understanding the Torah, the Ar Gadol, the light, the divine light, the supernal light of Eretz Yisrael. The other is Bavel, where it's dark, and where it's Mechavlim, and we have to work overtime with Yidgiyah Gedola to get to a level of Harifus and Pilpul to understand the Torah, and each kind of part of the Torah is superior. And at the end of this essay, we're going to come back to our pasuk in Parashas Chukas about Vahav Besufa, and we're going to try to understand why these two miracles really belong to the same pasuk: the miracle of the two mountains crushing our enemies, and the miracle of the fact that in Bavel we're able to be enemies, but at the end of the day we're going to be Ohavim Zelazim. So that's the part of the essay that I didn't get up to.
Left out the synthesis.
Right, synthesis, excellent. Synthesis is a perfect word to understand the Hegelian dialectic, when you have thesis and antithesis until finally you integrate them into one great synthesis. And that's what we're going to say, that the greatest synthesis of Torah study is when you bring these two Talmudim together, Talmud Bavli together with the Talmud Yerushalmi. Meaning when the rains come down in Eretz Yisrael, but they're nurtured by the Torah of Chutz Laaretz of Bavel, or for example when like Rav Yirmiyah comes on Aliyah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. So I want to take this opportunity to thank you all and wish you all a great day.